Well, we're doing a summer series on Proverbs, the way of wisdom. Many of you have probably heard P.T. Barnum. He was a famous American showman. He was often fond of saying, "There's a sucker born every minute." And he said that because he also liked to be able to capitalize on that. Well, I think the writer of the book of Proverbs would agree, you know, with that statement, because writers is God's gift given to help us wise up, to foolproof our life, if you will. And what it teaches through striking images and metaphors and short stories, all of this is written to help us find and follow what is life-giving and avoid dead-end ways of living. Now, despite the, you know, it's a couple thousand years that separate us from the original authors of Proverbs, we quickly discover that there are unchanging continuities in our shared humanity across the ages. And things like making friends, coping with sexuality, how to handle money, responding to poverty, making a living, dealing and learning with through loss, facing death, and so on. The topics go on. These are constant human themes, and Proverbs is a wise and timeless guide to us in the midst of all of them. Well, last week we looked at lesson one in Proverbs in the last part of chapter one, tuning into the right voices and tuning out the wrong ones in a world with so many that are vying for our attention. And I was reminded of this. I saw a clip from, actually, I think it was a book first, then a documentary that was done called Consuming Kids, The Commercialization of Childhood. And I wanted to kind of just show you a clip from that.
Not since the end of World War II, at the height of the baby boom, have there been so many kids in our midst. There are now more than 52 million kids under 12 in all in the United States, the biggest burst in the U.S. youth population in half a century. And for American business, these kids have come to represent the ultimate prize. An unprecedented, powerful, and elusive new demographic to be cut up and captured at all costs. There's no doubt that marketers have their sights on kids because of their increasing buying power, the amount of money they now spend on everything from clothes to music to electronics, totaling some $40 billion every year. But perhaps a bigger reason for marketers' interest in kids may be the amount of adult spending that American kids under 12 now directly influence, an astronomical $700 billion a year, roughly the equivalent of the combined economies of the world's 115 poorest countries.
That's all you're going to get today. But just, isn't that amazing? I mean, we are being targeted from the youngest age. So we might ask why is Proverbs so important? Because we need to be able to have wisdom to deal with the challenges and marketing that comes our way. Those voices, what to tune into and what to tune out. More than ever, we need the kind of simulation training that Proverbs is talking about. Well, today we're going to look at Proverbs 2, and I want to invite you to turn to Proverbs 2. Proverbs makes up lesson two. It's actually, you won't see it in your English, but it's an alphabetic poem. It's 22 verses. Any guess as to how many letters in the Hebrew alphabet? 22, yes, exactly. There we go. This was a simple, this is not skill testing. It's not a purely acrostic, that is A, B, C, but it is definitely telling us this is a literary work, and it's carefully prepared and it's complete. And structurally, this poem, actually you'll notice as we read it, could be divided into two halves. The first 11 verses indicating positive gains that wisdom brings. And then in verses 12 to 22, dangers that wisdom preserves or protects us from. And so let's read Proverbs chapter 2. My son or my child, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding. Indeed, if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He holds success in store for the upright. He is a shield to those whose walk is blameless. He guards the course of the just and protects the way of the faithful ones. Then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will protect you, and understanding will guard you. Wisdom will save you from the ways of wicked men, from men whose words are perverse, who have left the straight paths to walk in dark ways, who delight in doing wrong and rejoice in the perverseness of evil, whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. Wisdom will save you also from the adulterous woman, from the wayward woman with her seductive words, who has left the partner of her youth and ignored the covenant she made before God. Surely her house leads down to death, and her paths to the spirits of the dead. None who go to her return or attain the paths of life. Thus, you will walk in the ways of the just and keep to the paths of the righteous, for the upright will live in the land and the blameless will remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the land and the unfaithful will be torn from it. Well, the first thing we notice, I think, in these opening verses, four verses of this poem, is the time and effort and attention given to acquiring and attaining wisdom. You know, Jesus, of course, the greatest wisdom teacher of all time, stated very clearly in his famous Sermon on the Mount that the road that leads to life is narrow and the gate small. One just doesn't drift into or onto it. It requires us to be deliberate and dedicated. I mean, notice how intense, and I would call it full-bodied, the attainment of wisdom is. Beginning, accept. That Hebrew word is the sense of take, grasp. That is, it requires active participation. Kind of like soil that needs to be tilled so that it's ready to receive. There must be an active, practical habit of attention. I love Isaiah chapter 50, verse 4 says, "He awakens my ear morning by morning to listen like one being taught." There's posture for you of active acceptance. Well, it also talks about not just being ready to accept, but to store up. That is, to hide, protect. This is a word used for storing up treasure. You know, you're escalating, not just accepting, but actively. And I think of a prized collection. I don't know if you were ever a collector at all. You know, I remember as a kid, I used to collect frogs and then had a big barrel and everything that I would put them in. And, you know, but hockey cards too. Oh, wow. And we would trade hockey cards. There was collection. And maybe for you, it's coin collections or whatever it is. You know, think about that. And wisdom is saying this is like the best collectibles. These are the best collectibles possible. And we might, how do we collect these things and store them up? Of course, Proverbs would say, well, by repetition, memorization, integration. You know, when I worked as a carpenter, there was a carpenter's rule of thumb or a proverb. That was, measure twice, cut once. That's right. You know, and then after you would make the mistake, that would come back to your mind and you're thinking, oh yeah, measure twice, cut once. Well, that's the way the Proverbs is. And especially, I think, in our life, how many of you would know, of course, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6? Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, make him known, and he shall direct your paths. And as we integrate these, I think, become used verses for us. I like to share from time to time. I'll say, I have a verse to share with you that reminds me of something. And I'll say, it's a used verse. But in this case, I think it's good because this is where God has used that in my life. Those become really powerful, I think. It says to turn your ear. Now your whole body is getting into this. Think of full, undivided attention. You know, in class, when you come into class, you have the opportunity, or into church, to get the back seat or the front seat. Yeah, best seat in the house, right? A keener. And it says applying your heart. And the heart in Hebrew thought, we usually use that for, you know, feelings or emotions, but in Hebrew thought, that was the control center. Many of the functions that we maybe give to our brain, the Hebrew people gave to the heart. That was the place of will, of decision-making. It was the control center psychologically, morally, spiritually. And so it is saying, apply the very core of your being, your mind and your will to this. And call out and cry aloud. The two senses of that is one, it's very clear, and the other, that it's a very loud. Loud and clear. And then it says to look for, and then it heightens it. Search for something lost, as if you're hunting for treasure. I remember used verses that someone, a lady by the name of Shelley Ann, shared years ago. And she told in a welcome to the family class about how when she was a young girl, her sister had lost her wallet on a holiday. And she had saved up her money for this holiday, you know. And so the tears when this wallet was lost, and the search and the hunt, they turned up, you know, their whole campsite and vehicle upside down trying to find this. And they eventually did. But her father took the moment to say, you know, Jesus talked about a woman searching for a coin, searching for something lost. You know what we just experienced today? That's the kind of searching that Jesus does for us. And it was just like, she said, that was the aha moment. It was like, I knew the desperation of what that was to be lost. And then to find that, a turning point. It's a wonderful, teachable moments for what the feel of what this is. Well, Proverbs is saying, you know what? Invest in what matters most. And I want you to take a moment to, I'm going to get you actively involved here for a moment. I want you to think about what matters most to us generally in our culture. If you just look, where do people willing to spend their time and effort and money? Okay? So just turn to a couple people around you, and I want you to come up with at least three or four things that, like, we are just totally invested in our culture. Okay? Go for it. Okay, I'll reel it back in here. Okay. I think you probably got more than three or four, but let's see. Oh, yeah. Okay, what are the people in our culture invested in? Just shout it out. Money. Mega projects, okay? Shelter. Food. Oh, phones, yes. Technology, phones. Yes. Kids. Jobs, education, public transport. It's not hard. You just observe what, that's what tells you, not what people say, but what you actually see them investing in, right? And then the key question for us is, well, what matters most to me? What matters to us as a congregation, but also personally? What it matters, you know, maybe it's sports. I didn't hear quite that one. Your pet. Yeah, so for some it's work. There are litmus tests along the way of what matters most to us. And Proverbs is saying, significant effort and investment are required in what matters most. And so, the Proverbs is saying, just measure what you're totally sold out on to how sold out are you on knowing God. You know, there's technological know-how is so important in our age, how to do this and that. And knowledge of God, the source of all wisdom, the creator, is tragically undervalued in our age. And it should be very important. What's also interesting to me in the contrast from verses 1 to 4 and then verse 6. First it says, you know, give all of your effort to this. And then it says, for the Lord gives. There's this kind of tension or paradox, maybe. On the one hand, the teacher speaks as if everything depends upon the listening and obedience of the student, of the youth. And on the other hand, it says wisdom, you know, is a divine gift. And I think sometimes it's unless we are really keenly aware of how important this gift is, we won't treat it with the greatness that it deserves. And I think God is saying both are important here. Well, we also want to look at one of the, when it comes to wisdom. Wisdom, there's benefits. And the two kind of basic categories that we're going to look at here is there are positive benefits, and then there are protective benefits involved here. And so in terms of when it comes to the positive benefits, the first thing that it says is, well, where there's no who. No who. The goal of wisdom, far from being academic, is spiritual. It says, then you will understand the fear of the Lord. That is an awe, the weight that God really has and should have in our lives. And then you will find the knowledge of God. And knowledge in Hebrew is always relational. And so it has this sense of you will find the greatness, the awe of God, and the intimacy of God. Commentator Derek Kidner points out, with these two phrases, verse 5 encompasses the two classic Old Testament terms for true religion. That is the poles of awe and intimacy. God is a great relational treasure, and knowing God is so important. And then there's also not just know who, but know how. This paragraph goes on to show that to know the Lord is also to know his ways, to know how to live, to become skillful, the craftsperson of life. And it just uses that word success. The word is the sense of effectiveness. And this practical note is prominent in Proverbs and sees the wise person as having a practical know-how of how to live effectively, skilled in our relationships, in our work, how to live with neighbors in a neighborly fashion, how to live morally and ethically. And as the verbs make clear in verses 7 to 9, it made clear the upright, the blameless, the just, and the faithful. In Psalm 78, the last verse in Psalm 78, verse 72, it speaks of David, Israel's greatest king, having skill of hand, it said, and integrity of heart. I love the way that it combines those. That's a great summary. Skill of hand, that is, a know-how, and integrity of heart, because there was a know-who involved in that. And so Proverbs, when it has penetrated into our very being, into the very heart, to the control center of a person, it forms our characters. It actually shapes our desires and our decisions. And so we'll look at next some of the protective benefits of wisdom. Some of the specific protection that God gives through wisdom is illustrated in verses 12 to 15 and in verses 16 to 19. And so the first is to be protected from evil men, and the other is from evil women. So covers both here. The protective process happens when wisdom and knowledge become ingrained in our and influence our way of thinking and become what I would call our acquired taste. In verse 10, it says, wisdom will become pleasant to your soul. Now, soul in Hebrew, the word often translated soul is the word nephesh. Now, that doesn't mean much to you, but it does when you get used to coming across in Hebrew, because in Hebrew, nephesh is the place of our appetites. When you would say, I'm totally, and it's also when you would say, I'm totally exhausted and I need to be refreshed, your nephesh, your very soul is spent, okay? And so when it says in Psalm 23, he restores my nephesh, okay? The vitality of my being. And so when wisdom becomes pleasant, it becomes, oh, that sustains me. Okay? It becomes the place of our desires, and so it's pleasant. And so to understand these virtues is to put them into practice. There's an Arabic proverb that says, before you shoot an arrow of truth, make sure you dip it in honey. I love that image, right? Before you shoot an arrow of truth, make sure you dip it in honey. So then it will become pleasant to the person, right? It's not going to be as a put down, but it's going to say, no, I'm really for you. And so it's going to be pleasant. So there's ways of speaking also so that wisdom becomes a pleasant to us. And in the verses that follow, wisdom takes the initiative, both in entering the heart and exercising the Lord's protection. So at first it says it saves, from wicked men. Notice the influence in their words and in their action or their ways, in their words and their ways. Their words, it says, are perverse, or it's the word also used for seductive words, such as the solicitations that we met back in chapter 1 with easy money, a get-rich-quick scheme, go along with the gang and the crowd, without any regard for others. The tongue of the perverse is described elsewhere in Proverbs as a menace to public health. That's quite something, isn't it? The tongue of the perverse is described as a menace to public health and has to be treated with radical surgery, says commentator Bruce Waltke, as that applied to life-threatening cancer. Its functional synonyms are twisted and devious. And wisdom will protect us by making the talk and interests of evil people alien to us. You ever taste something and you're like, wow? We had a picture of one of our nephew and niece. They had a daughter a while ago, and she's almost to the toddler stage, and they were introducing her to a lemon. And they put up the little video as her, so she's, used to it. She takes a big bite of this lemon, and oh, the reaction on her face, and it's like she slaps that lemon out of their hands, okay? That is an alien to my taste. This is not good, okay? And Proverbs is saying that if you really develop an appetite and a taste for truth and honesty and integrity, okay, and caring about others, that when you are given something else and an invitation comes, it will be like it is alien to you. You will not have any appetite for that. And so that's how it will protect you. Instead of being enticed by that, it will seem inedible. Instead of a turn on, it will be a turn off. Thinking of just an illustration of this in Psalms, Psalm 120. One of the things that's so common in our age is this appeal to violence as a solutions to the world's problems. I call it redemptive violence, but it's a myth of redemptive violence. But in Psalm 120, verses 5 to 7, here the psalmist, he is calling out to the Lord in his distress, and we find out what that distress is. In verse 5 of Psalm 120, verse 5, he says, "Woe to me that I dwell in Meshech." You say, well, okay, I live among the tents of Kedar. You're not quite sure exactly what he's getting at yet. "Too long I have lived among those who hate peace. I am for peace, but when I speak, they are for war." It's distressing to him, this talk of violence and resorting to violence, because he has been deeply shaped by the God of peace who seeks the way of peace. And so for me, that was a powerful illustration also of how this person has been shaped by that, so that peace is their default setting. Well, it says it's the other protective benefits are it saves from the adulterous woman. Now, it's clear here in these verses 16 to 19, that the woman here represents a threat, and the threat is of a sexual nature. Notice her seductive words. So often, again, it's with the words, it's the appeal. She's propositioning the son with a one-night romantic liaison, a rendezvous, not marriage. In Proverbs, smooth and flattering talk, we might also note, is not exclusive to women. In Proverbs 26 and in Proverbs 29, verse 5, it speaks of also men using seductive words. The one who makes his words smooth as if setting a trap. That's what Proverbs says. Here, the woman, having abandoned her husband, ignored the vows, vows which are promises before God, she places no limits on who she will go after. And it's worth noting that the opposite of remember. You know what the opposite of remember is? Forget. No, it's not actually forget. The opposite of remember is dismember. Yes. So literally, to remember is really to reattach, to reconnect. And so the opposite of that is to dismember, to cut apart, to dismember. Now, forgetting can be, but dismember is the nuance in the Hebrew word here in verse 17, where she has left behind. She has ignored the covenant of God. She has dismembered herself from God and his ways and the commitment. She has cut it off. And it's interesting because the word Hebrew and the word covenant in Hebrew is you always cut a covenant. You always cut a covenant because you would take animals and you would make cut a covenant in blood. And we actually have the picture in Genesis, where Genesis 17, where God makes a covenant with Abraham. Abraham is saying, God, I know that you've made this great promise to me that I'm going to be the father of many nations, but I don't like I have any children even. How can I know? And I'm getting so old. It seems impossible. And God cuts a covenant, and he has Abraham take animals. He slices them, cuts them right in half, puts a half on each side of a slope, and so the blood would run down. And then in cutting a covenant, then the parties would walk through that blood. And they would say a formula, may this happen to me and more so if I don't keep my word. That's what cutting a covenant entailed. And the image that's giving there, always when it says make a covenant, it's always literally cut a covenant. Because this is a major commitment. And yet it's intense. And here it says she has dismembered herself from that. She has ignored the covenant that she made before God with her partner. And so the Proverbs is it's very visual language, and the social fabric of the whole community unravels when verbal agreements, especially vows, are not kept. And the youth who embraces her way of life for her sexual favors will find that her way leads down into death. You know where her house number is? 3323. You know they say 3323. DEAD. Right? Dead. Doesn't look that way from the beginning. You know, both life and death, they look green, invitational. And he's saying, no, this one leads to death. This temptation is actually going to be addressed much more in chapters 5 to 7, which we'll look at not today. You know, there's also a kind of a double meaning at work here, because this woman who's presented as an adulterous woman, it's not just physical, but it's also spiritually adultery. At one level, this paragraph is about sexual temptation. At another, this figure stands for the opposite of Lady Wisdom, who we will meet in Proverbs, who sets the table for us to come and dine at. There's another woman seeking our attention, but her ways are not life-giving and her rewards are only destructive. Wisdom protects us by enabling us to say no to sinful behavior. So Proverbs, this will conclude this lesson with a powerful promise and a grave warning. First, we'll begin with a powerful promise, just underlining that this is the way, there's a way to abundant life. Walk in the ways of the just. Keep to the paths of the righteous. And we think about biblical models and mentors who followed in this way. I was reminded of Ruth and Boaz. And if you don't know that story, you should know that story in the Old Testament with Ruth and Boaz. And what God brought out of people who lived with integrity and who followed the ways of the Lord. And they became, even though in destitution, Ruth and her mother-in-law, Naomi, God changed the ways, and by living with integrity and looking out, not for myself, but in Proverbs, the way of the righteous is not to look out for your own interests, but to look out for the interests of others. That's why Jesus is the ultimate wise person, right? And that is the way to abundant life. And Roland Murphy, a commentator, he describes this Proverbs here as a daring vision for the youth to follow. Promises of great wisdom and a closeness with God that will enable one to avoid all the dangers to the moral life and attain a secure existence. And here the image given is of life in the land. That is, it's abundant life. And then there, of course, there is a grave warning. The there is a way of death and destruction to be avoided. The wicked will be cut off from the land and literally torn from it. Well, I think there's some applications for us in the midst of this. And I think the first is to prioritize. How are you going to prioritize, you know, the gaining of wisdom? You know, the key is not to prioritize, one writer said, not to prioritize what's on your schedule, but to schedule your priorities. Because sometimes it isn't even on there enough. Maybe for you, first thing in the morning, that's the time when I like to do my reading and prayer, first thing in the morning. Sometimes I use a technology to help me with a Bible app that goes off with the alarm to remind her to read it, okay? But to make those priorities. Second, positives. Well, it's helpful to remember make sure you talk about the positive reasons for saying no, but also the benefits of knowing God. I remember a writer once asked in a small group setting, what's the best thing about being a Christian? I thought, wow, I never really thought about that. What's the best thing about being a Christian? What are some of the benefits of knowing God? Eternal life. Any other benefits? Peace of mind. Joy. Hope. Peace, I think I heard. Right? These are wonderful benefits. I remember someone who had a new Christian going into an operation before. She'd always faced crisis with fear, and as we talked about it, I said, you know, you seemed really worried and anxious about this. Can we pray? And we prayed. And she said, it was like, wow! She suddenly felt peace. This was a brand new experience for her, knowing God and what difference it made. And so just some of the things, you know, it can be a moral compass that we're never alone, that we suddenly find a purpose and meaning. We need to be talking about the benefits of knowing God, right? And also the protections. And there's different kinds of protections, and we need to verbalize and visualize protection. Some of you know that I used to dream about being a professional NHL hockey player. That was before, you know, it was just an illusion. I was a four-year-old kid, 4 years old. I got a number 4 shirt that my mom sewed a number 4 on so I could be like Bobby Orr, you know. And so I know that there was also a great goalie, you know. Anybody know who this guy is? Jerry Cheevers. You know, in hockey, I learned the goalies used to never wear a mask. And they would get big gashes in their head, and they would go stitch them up, and then they would send them back into the game. And I think Jerry Cheevers kind of came along, and he thought, this is crazy. And so what he did is he had a mask, but he also had one of the coaches, every time a puck would hit on the mask, okay, he would make a black mark and show where he would have got stitches on it. So you look at that. And you're wondering, why wear a goalie mask? Right? And you just pull this thing out, and it's like, why not? And are there things in our life, I wonder, is there a way to visualize, these are the protections that God gives us, okay? To resist temptation. I'm reminded, I know a kid at a party with other kids, elementary school, and I don't know who was choosing the movie, but the kid figured it was not appropriate. Came home from the party. That's not an appropriate movie for me to watch. Put the mark on there. There's wisdom. An old employee who saw that their company was advertising late night with commercials that were totally inappropriate. Exploited women. And he thought, I don't know how my boss is going to handle this, but he went and he talked to the boss about this. That took some courage. And the boss said, I didn't know you felt that way about others. Talked to a few other people and found out there's others that actually feel this same way. Pulled the commercials. Put a mark on. There was wisdom protecting. Maybe didn't buy into some of the advertisers' appeals. You know, did you see that? Everybody else was getting it. I got a text this last week. My phone company is going to give me a new LG 6 free. I find out, wow, this is like $800 to $1,000 for this phone. And then I go there. Yes, it's free. but your $40 plan is now going to cost you $80 a month instead. No, yeah, nothing's free. You know, boy, okay, got saved. Wisdom said, no, don't do that. So I encourage you to wise up. Why wisdom? Remember, what wisdom, not only both the positive benefits and also the protective benefits of wisdom. That's God's gift to us. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you once again for this world-class education compiled by the wisest man who ever lived for his son, for his children, to whom he spared no expense, and who you in your wisdom knew that this was being collected for all of your people. And that you make this available to us because, Lord, you long for us to know you. That's the best benefit of wisdom, is to truly know you. And then to be protected from things we don't even know yet what we need to be protected from, because we have been trained to think like you. We have been trained, even we find our desires, our appetites are shaped in such a way that when evil comes our way, there is no appeal. Lord, make us that wise, because we see in Jesus what true wisdom is like, and we want to be like Jesus. Amen.